following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
You know, this any minute rapture theology has actually opened the door for Satan in the culture. I'll explain.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, biblical scholar and cultural commentator, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice for moral sanity and spiritual clarity. Call 866-34-TRUTH to get on The Line of Fire. And now, here's your host, Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. Coming your way audio only, which sounds the same on radio and podcast, but you're not getting to see my smiling face on YouTube or Facebook. Coming away from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I will not be taking calls today, but I'm going to answer some fun, random questions that have been posted on Facebook a little later in the broadcast. We've got some great, important content to cover with you. But first, a question. Are you getting our monthly equipping, inspirational, informational, impartational, frontline newsletter? If not, right now, take a moment, unless you're driving, go to thelineoffire.org, thelineoffire.org, and simply hit subscribe, and we will get you on our list. It's digital. You can read it in any format. It's free, of course. And then every week, we'll let you know latest articles and videos that we've put out on key areas, key equipping areas that will really help and minister to you. I'm always blessed when I'm talking to other pastors and leaders to see how regularly they use our material. When I'm on other radio broadcasts doing interviews, always blessed to know that so many of the folks I'm doing an interview with use our materials regularly. So we want to be a support to you. I'm not a pastor. I don't have that full-time responsibility. We can focus on the things that God's called us to focus on and thereby serve all of the rest of you. As every day, friends, it is our goal to infuse you with faith and truth and courage to help you stand strong on the front lines. My big question, do you have a multi-generational mentality? As a child of God, are you not just thinking about the time in which we live, but the world in which your kids or grandkids or great-grandkids will live in? Are you making deposits? Are you working strategically for the coming generations? Or do you have the mindset of, we're out of here any minute, it's only going to get worse, why bother? If that is your mindset, if the latter is your mindset, Jesus is coming any minute. You can see the world crumbling around us. Who's even thinking about next generations? We're not going to see the next generations. If that's your mentality, I want to suggest to you that in having that mentality, you open a door to the devil himself, because he is absolutely thinking in a multi-generational way, and he is absolutely planning in a multi-generational way. And if we don't have plans, if we're not making deposits into the next generations, he certainly will. Let me read to you from Psalm 78. Psalm 78, it's a maskil of Asaf. A maskil is a wise saying. My people, hear my teaching. Listen to the words of my mouth. I'll open my mouth with a parable. I will utter hidden things, things from of old, things we have heard and known, things our ancestors have told us. We will not hide them from their descendants. We will tell the next generation the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord, the power and the wonders he has done. He decreed statutes for Jacob and established the law in Israel. So it goes on from there, which commanded our ancestors to teach their children so the next generation would know them, even the children yet to be born, and they in turn would tell their children. If you talk to a religious Jewish person and ask that person, why do you do what you do? Of course, they'll give you a spiritual answer. But part of that answer, if you're talking to a man, he'll say, I learned it from my father, who learned it from his father, who learned it from his father going all the way back to Moses. In their view, they're fulfilling what Moses passed on from generation to generation. Think within the Torah, after the Shema, the words, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, or the Lord is our God, the Lord alone. after those words are spoken, one of the commands is to teach these things diligently to your children. Repeat them to them. Impress them on them. And you think of certain religious rites like the Passover. Why do you do this? So that your children will ask you why you do this, so that they will learn from these things. Because every generation in Israel had to have its own encounter with God. And if it didn't have its own encounter with God, as a result, it would backslide. So the children of Israel, after coming into the Promised Land, the end of Joshua 24, then the early chapters of Judges, coming into the Promised Land, it says that they served the Lord as long as Joshua and the elders were alive who had seen the works of the Lord. But when they died, because that next generation had not seen the power of God and encountered God for themselves, they worshiped idols. They fell away. And it's the same in the church world, that your kids are not serving a grandfather God. Your God is your father. Well, he's not grandfather to them. They have to know him as father. They have to know him as God. And that means that in raising our children and having the next generation and pouring into the next generation, we are thinking in multi-generational ways, with the goal being that our kids or grandkids or great-grandkids grow up in a better world than we did. That our kids or grandkids or great-grandkids grow up in a world where the gospel is spread more, where liberties for the gospel have spread more, where the quality of life has improved, that we're thinking in these terms. The idea that we're out of here any minute and that there's no reason to think about the future is a dangerous and detrimental view. It's what I heard when I got saved almost 53 years ago, that Jesus was coming any moment, that we're out of here very soon, that the prophecies had all lined up. I believe in living with a sense of urgency. Why? Because we only have one life. If you get around me, if you walk with me, if you talk to people who know me, I am on the go. I'm stretched out. I'm not sitting back thinking, hey, we got 80, 90 years. No, I'm thinking, we've got one life, and the stakes are high. And every day, people hang between life and death. So by all means, we go for it. By all means, we pour ourselves out. By all means, we run our race. I preach on that all the time and preach it to myself. In fact, God has to remind me to rest because I have such a runner mentality. Not only so, but none of us know the moment of our death. So if you want to be ready to meet the Lord, you have to be ready at any time to meet the Lord. Plus, if we love him, we're not looking for opportunities to sin. How much more time do I get to sin before Jesus comes or before I die? No, if you love the Lord, you're just looking for opportunities to serve him. So the idea of his coming any moment, and therefore I don't think about the future, serves no purpose at all. And it is completely unbiblical. When Jesus says, don't think about tomorrow, give no thought, it means don't be anxious. Don't be anxious about tomorrow. But the idea that we're just thinking about the here and now, because the end of the world is soon, is a terribly destructive and unhelpful idea, because what it means is we won't get involved culturally, that we won't get involved in day-to-day things that affect the world around us, that we won't get involved as being a salt and light in politics, that we won't do that because everything's going down the tubes, it doesn't really matter. And because of that, others with other agenda, and Satan himself with his agenda, They're gonna see that their agenda comes into power and comes into play. And that's why we see things as they are in America in many ways, because many in the church in the last generation thought we're out of here any minute and the rapture is coming any second, and there's no reason to be planning and thinking ahead. Now, you may say, Mike Brown, who do you think you are? I believe in an any-minute rapture, and I don't think like that at all. Wonderful. I'm not speaking to you. I'm speaking to those who do believe in an end-of-minute rapture and have thought that way and do think that way. And trust me, I've met plenty over the decades and decades ago that would have been somewhat of my mentality instead of a long-term plan and a long-term vision. Let me give you some examples. We read a lot now about the Long March. Christopher Rufo, in his book about the leftist revolution, talks about it in depth, but many have talked about it for years. that Marxist communist thinkers in the 60s looked at America, looked at the state of America, saw that that calling for kind of a proletariat revolt in America would not play out the way it played out in other countries, that they needed to find other aspects of class warfare, and that coming in through the front door with a radical ideology would only grab a minority of people. And what they needed was a larger strategy, a longer-term strategy, and it's called the Long March. And what that entailed was now getting involved in the school system, in the educational system, becoming professors and educators and thinkers and influencers, and little by little getting the ideas into the campuses until they became the dominant views on the campuses, to the extent that now this radical Marxist ideology that divides the world into oppressor and oppressed and colonizer and colonized is just common in our universities across the country. And it came up in the BLM protests. It's coming up in the anti-Israel protests now. It was a long plan. And now we see the manifestation of it. You know, it's like you don't eat right for 30 years, and suddenly you go to the doctor because you're not feeling well, something's wrong, and you find out that you've destroyed your heart, or you've destroyed your liver, or you've destroyed some other part of your body, and it's too late to fix it now because you didn't see it. You didn't see it until the symptoms became more acute, and then you noticed it. That's what's happened in our schools. I have quotes from gay activists, and they're talking about their strategy in the 60s, And they said, we're going to write the revolution into law. That's almost a verbatim quote. We're going to write the revolution into law. And they went about doing that. And others in the educational system with our children, they've had certain cultural agendas. And they've then sought to bring these into I was going to use the word infiltrate, but they're working the part of the system. It's hardly infiltrating when you're part of the system, right? And legitimately in there, hired legitimately or voted in legitimately, then you just can implement your system. And they've done it. And radical feminists with their ideologies. You think radical feminism affected America with groups like WICH, which stood for, they were radical feminist group began in the late 60s. You think that they changed American culture, which stood for the Women's International Terrorist Conspiracy from Hell? No, that's not how things change. It changed through these ideas becoming more mainstreamed and more acceptable. So people with very different visions for America have been working hard, strategically, sometimes brilliantly, tirelessly, to implement their agendas. And they're not going anywhere. And I mean, maybe they're thinking the world's going to end because of global warming or something like that. But otherwise, they're going on with their agendas, going on with their plans. And many of us think we're out of here. And then the worse it gets, the more we say we're out of here. Friends, it's a dangerous, destructive mentality. And it's anti-biblical, because a biblical mentality is a multi-generational mentality. It's absolutely critical that we embrace it and understand it, lest things get even worse in the days to come. All right, much more coming your way right here on The Line of Fire.
This is Michael Ellison, founder of Trivita Wellness. Would you like to know a way to support strong hair and nail growth? A way to support healthy skin and a healthier gut? Well, it is no longer a secret. I would like to introduce Trivita's Multicollagen, a pure hydrolyzed collagen peptide. Multicollagen has 5 types of collagen that support your body in so many ways. It is abundant in amino acids, gluten-free, and hormone-free. Here's a testimony from a happy user of Trivita's Multicollagen.
A friend introduced me to Trivita's Multicollagen about 2 years ago. I was really excited to try it. I had noticed that as I was getting older, I was losing a lot of hair, and my nails and skin were not as healthy as they used to be. After a few weeks of taking Multicollagen, I noticed a really big difference. My hair loss was almost none. My nails were growing quickly, and my skin was much healthier. It's so easy to take, too. I just add a scoop in my morning coffee every day. Multicollagen is the one supplement that I will never give up. Thank you, Trivita.
Now you can say goodbye to dull hair, brittle nails, and tired-looking skin. True beauty and optimal health starts within you.
Support thicker hair, healthier nails, and supple skin. Trivita's multi-collagen really works. Try it for yourself by calling 1-800-771-5584 or online at trivita.com. Order today and use promo code BROWN25 to receive 25% off your order. And know that a significant portion of your first order will go to help the Line of Fire radio broadcast. So call now, 1-800-771-5584, 1-800-771-5584, or online at trivita.com.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on the Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire. Michael Brown coming away live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, just having a blessed, beautiful time with the Pentecostal Assemblies of West Indies. About 150 leaders have gathered together, just precious to worship with them, pray with them, and a privilege to minister the word to them. And Saturday morning, God willing, flying to Israel. So please pray for that trip. Lots of challenges and lots of details. I trust that God is with us and goes before us. So thank you for praying for that. So look forward to being back in Israel and ministering to my brothers and sisters there in the midst of such difficult, trying times. And shout out of appreciation to our co-sponsor, Trivita. That helps us broadcast. If you're listening, in part, large part, to the help of Trivita. And I hope you're benefiting from their wellness resources as well. Remember, you can call 771-5584. That's the number. 800-771-5584 to check out their great wellness products. Let me read to you from Psalm 127. I have to admit that for years, I read the psalm as if it was thought one, stop, thought two. There was kind of two separate thoughts within the psalm. But really, it's one thought. So a song of ascents of Solomon. So these were recited in the journey up to Jerusalem for annual feast, ascending up to Jerusalem. Unless the Lord builds the house, the builders labor in vain. Now, it's interesting that it's talking about the house when Solomon was building the house of the Lord, right? Unless the Lord builds the house, the builders labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the guards stand watch in vain. In vain you rise early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat, for he grants sleep to those he loves. Now, the word for in vain is shav. The word for sleep is shena. Obviously, they sound completely different. But in spelling, the way they're spelled here in Psalm 127, there's only one letter difference between them, and the contrast is even more clear, the in vain versus sleep versus rest. So I used to look at that as part one of the psalm, and now a separate, almost unrelated part. Children are heritage from the Lord, offspring a reward from him, like arrows in the hands of a warrior are children born in one's youth. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. They will not be put to shame when they contend with their opponents in court. About 20 years ago, I realized, wait, there's a connection here. If I saw it before, it didn't really dawn on me in a major way. That the rest that God gives and the sleep that he gives to those he loves comes also in the form of sons, of children. Because the dad can rest while they work. That as you've raised your kids, they can now carry on things that you were doing and you can rest. And there's something about raising up not just physical sons and daughters, but spiritual sons and daughters. And every day as I go to sleep at night We've got spiritual sons and daughters preaching the gospel all around the world and making an impact for Jesus all around the world. And every day as we sleep, we have believers around the world using our materials, Jewish objections to Jesus and debates with rabbis and different things. And they are in turn taking those materials and using them and disseminating them in many languages and many different formats around the world while I'm sleeping. Is there something to it? It's multi-generational. It's one reason why I joyfully pour into multiple different ministry schools every single year. Now that I don't have our own schools, we just put all the classes for Fire School of Ministry online as the school got very small a few years back. So it's my joy to pour into the next generation all the time, not just next generation of leaders as a spiritual father. That's a joy and privilege to do that all the time, but also to the next generation of younger students as we pour into them on a regular basis, you know, kids that are college age. And look, our grandkids range now from 22 to 17. I believe that their purposes of God for their lives and callings of God on their lives. And what about their kids? And so until Jesus returns, we think in multi-generational terms. It's essential. And we think, okay, how are decisions that we're making today affecting the coming generations? How are decisions that we're making today going to affect the kids or grandkids or great-grandkids that we have, the coming generations that come into this world? If we just say, well, look, it's only getting worse, and you know, we know prophecy says it's only getting worse till Jesus returns. What if it doesn't come for five generations? Then what? What if it doesn't come for 10 generations? Can you guarantee me, prove to me in Scripture, by Scripture, without any possible doubt that that's not possible? No, I don't think you can. I certainly want to be the case that he comes sooner rather than later, but we can't prove that, guarantee it, based on Scripture. So what happened to Absalom? We know he all the problems with his father and then stealing the throne and dying in battle. And at one point, Scripture says he has three sons, but 2 Samuel 18:18 said that he built a monument to himself. While he was alive, he built a monument to himself. Why? Because he said, I have no sons. So they must have died. So he builds a monument in his own name to himself, and that's all that's left. A dead monument, because he had no sons to carry on his legacy. Remember in the Bible, you're Simon, son of Jonah, right? You're carrying on the legacy of those who went before you. And you know, there's a striking verse in the book of Ezra. When Ezra is introduced, it's quite wild, the description here. But look at what it says about him. In the book of Ezra, let me just get the right passage up here. I typed it in wrong. Sorry about that. In the book of Ezra, so he arrives, Ezra the scribe arrives, and he is now going to help there with the exiles who have returned. And when it's giving his description, it gives it. I mean, I could read it all, but it's son of going all, you know how far back it goes? All the way back to Levi. Yeah, I mean, here, let me read it for you. Ezra 7. Ezra, son of Sariah, son of Azariah, son of Hilkiah, son of Shalom, son of Zadok, son of Ahitub, son of Amariah, son of Azariah, son of Meraiot, son of Zerachiah, son of Uzi, son of Buki, son of Abishua, son of Phinehas, son of Eleazar, son of Aaron. It goes all the way back to Aaron, the chief priest. This Ezra. So that's his lineage. That's his heritage. What does Hezekiah say when Isaiah confronts him? Hezekiah shows all the palace goods and everything he has when the king of Babylon sends envoys after his recovery from illness. And what does Hezekiah show? Well, they're obviously thinking we could be allies. We could be allies because we have a common enemy with Assyria. So he shows the Babylonians everything he has. And Isaiah comes and says, what happened? Who are these people? He tells him. He said, what'd you show him? Everything. And he says, Hezekiah, everything in this temple, everything in the palace is going to go. It's going to be carried into exile in Babylon. The very people that just visited you, their country is going to be carried into exile. And some of your own kids, your descendants, are going to be carried into exile. And they're going to be eunuchs. Some of your grandsons, great-grandsons, they're going to be eunuchs in Babylon. You know what Hezekiah says? Praise the Lord. The word of the Lord is good. Because he thought, well, there'll be peace and safety in my days. What? Hezekiah? The godly King Hezekiah? Are you kidding me? That was his attitude? Well, praise the Lord. There's going to be peace and safety in my day. Oh, what a horrific, selfish, sinful, inexcusable attitude. No. He should have said, let the judgment fall on me and not on future generations. I've preached on these themes to leaders, and then pastors have come up to me, old men of God who've served with distinction, warriors, faithful, with sadness in their eyes. And they said, we don't have any sons. I don't have any sons. Basically, the work's on me, and when I die, that I don't have any sons. What? It doesn't even mean physical sons. It means spiritual sons. And I'm thinking, what happened to all the sons in the faith in your congregation? You must have perceived them as threats. And rather than lifting them up and hey friends, Michael Brown here. My delight to serve as your voice for moral sanity and spiritual clarity. We are living in such urgent times today, friends, that all of us are in the line of fire. There's a target on your back. There's a target on my back. If you simply seek to live by biblical values or just conservative moral values, you could be canceled. You could be cast out. You could be put down. You could be silenced. I'm here to say, friends, that I am not about to be silenced, and I don't believe you are either. It is time for us to stand up. It is time for us to say enough is enough. It is time for us to push back in Jesus' name. Not fighting the way the world fights. No, overcoming evil with good, overcoming hatred with love, overcoming the flesh with the power of the Spirit, overcoming lies with truth. And that's what we're here to do on the Line of Fire broadcast. And friends, it's not just a broadcast. It is a movement of people around the world. God's people standing up saying enough is enough and saying, Lord, here we are. Send us, use us. I want to urge you today to join our support team because we are on the front lines together. And we are literally touching people around the world, in America, in the nations, in Israel. And together with your help, we're going to amplify this voice and spread this movement around the globe. So I encourage you, go right now to thelineoffire.org, thelineoffire.org. Click donate, monthly support, thelineoffire.org. Click donate, monthly support. When you do, you become a torchbearer. We immediately send you two great life-changing books. We immediately give you access to many classes I've taught. Others have to pay to take those. You get them for free. Exclusive video audio content, a new audio message every month, an insider prayer newsletter, 15% discount on our online bookstore, so much more. Join our support team today. Go to thelineoffire.org. Donate monthly.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on The Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
From the past, where it certainly was there, but is it active still today? Not even perhaps in laws that were passed years ago that may still be on the books that most people don't recognize, but actively, is there systemic racism in our courts? Is there systemic racism in our schools? Is there systemic racism in our places of business? That's the question we want to ask. And I want to take you into some interaction with now Republican candidate Senator Tim Scott, who's on The View. Whoopi Goldberg, others have said some things about Tim Scott, very liberal host for the most part, or sometimes entirely on The View. And
blasted Tim Scott, and well, he took exception to what was said and came on The View, and there was some lively, candid discussion. So I want to play this for you, but give me your take. Do you agree with him or not? 866-342. Do you agree with him or the host he was interacting with, Sudie Hostin, who herself is African-American? 866-348-7884. Tell me where you weigh in on this. I would love to get your perspective. And I'm going to give you mine, which may surprise some of you. So here we go. It's an extended clip, but we're going to play it straight through.
Senator, I am actually happy that you're here. We have some things in common. You grew up in a single family household, single mother household. I grew up with both of my parents, but raised in the Bronx Projects amidst a lot of poverty and violence. And you are the first black senator elected in the South since the Reconstruction. That would be about 114 years. Yet you say that your life disproves leftist lies. And yes. My question to you is, I'm the exception, right? You're the exception. Maybe even Miss Whoopi Goldberg is the exception.
Oh, she's definitely the exception.
But we are not the rule. And so when it comes to racial inequality, it persists in five core aspects of life in the U.S. Economics, education, health care, criminal justice, and housing. At nearly every turn, these achievements were fought, threatened, and erased, most often by white violence. You have indicated that you don't believe in systemic racism. What is your definition of systemic racism?
Let me answer the question that you've answered.
Does it even exist in your mind?
Let me answer the question this way. One of the things that I think about, and one of the reasons why I'm on the show, is because of the comments that were made, frankly, on this show, that the only way for a young African-American kid to be successful in this country is to be the exception and not the rule. That is a dangerous, offensive, disgusting message to send to our young people today, that the only way to succeed is by being the exception. I will tell you that if my life is the exception, I can't imagine.
But
it's not, actually. It's been
114 years.
Yeah, so the fact of the matter is we've had an African-American president, African-American vice president. We've had two African-Americans to be secretaries of the state. In my home city, the police chief is an African-American who's now running for mayor. The head of the highway patrol for South Carolina is an African-American.
In
1975, there was about 15% unemployment in the African-American community for the first time in the history of the country. It's under 5%.
40% homelessness.
And 50% of the folks in our community.
Get 13% of the population.
You had the chance to ask the question. I know that I've watched you on the show that you like people to be deferential and respectful, so I'm going to do the
same
thing.
That is true.
So here's what I'm going to suggest. I'm going to suggest the fact of the matter is that progress in America is palpable. It can be measured in generations. I look back at the fact that my grandfather, born in 1921 in Sally, South Carolina, when he was on a sidewalk, a white person was coming, he had to step off and not make eye contact. That man believed then, with some doubt now, in the goodness of America, because he believed that having faith in God, faith in himself, and faith in what the future could hold for his kids would unleash opportunities in ways that you cannot imagine. Every kid today can look, just change the stations and see how much progress has been made in this country. ABC, NBC, CBS, ESPN, CNN, Fox News all have African-American and Hispanic hosts. So what I'm suggesting is that the yesterday's exception is today's rule. And for us to suggest
America has met its promise.
No, of course, the concept of America is that we are going to become a more perfect union. But in fact, the challenges that we face 50 years ago and 60 years ago should not be the same challenges that we face today. And here's a way that you measure that. When my mother was born, about 10% of African Americans got a high school degree, diploma. Today, it's over 90%. When you look at the income success that
we've
had.
That's an HBCU stat.
Well, listen, HBCU stat is a good one, because one of the reasons why I took the funding for HBCUs to the highest level in the history of the country, and then I helped make it permanent, is because I believe that education is the closest thing to magic in America. So I'm about making sure that our kids have as many opportunities to succeed as possible.
All right, so It goes on a little bit beyond that. You know, others jumped in, so that's why we cut it there. So I appreciate them letting Tim Scott speak freely and the interaction there. And I love getting both sides. I've often said that when it was Hannity and Combs on Fox, and you'd hear them both going back and forth, I really liked that format because it's easy to preach to the choir. You agree with me, I say things you all agree with, and yeah, go ahead. And we live in our little echo chambers. We often do that on social media. I love when things get challenged. I've often said that when I'm asked to address a controversial subject on a college campus, university campus, I request a debate with someone that holds to the opposite view. It's rare that we get that to happen, but I request it because I want everyone to hear the best presentation from both sides. That's why if someone wants to debate me, I want to make sure they're qualified so it's fair. It's not fair to debate me in areas where I'm not qualified, right? You could debate me on some in-depth subject of biology or astronomy and crush me because it's not my field, but that's not fair to other Bible believers who are strong in biology or strong in chemistry or strong in astronomy or whatever the case may be. So I want people to hear the best presentation from the other side so things will be fair as much as possible. And then you can sort it out, right? So I know that Sunny Hostin didn't speak at length, given time to Tim Scott, but she raised some points saying, hey, still the exception. He's saying progress being made. Okay, so here's what struck me, and you can weigh in. What do you think?
The funding for HBCUs?
Here's what struck me in listening to his words. It's how recently things were so bad for many African Americans. Now, part of what Tim Scott's talking about is where you grow up, right? Did you grow up in the inner city? Did you grow up in the suburbs? Did you grow up with two parents? Did you grow up with one parent? Those things are massive, massive factors as to whether you will be the rule or the exception to the rule. Follow? In other words, you could go into inner city Baltimore and find an extremely low percentage in terms of the presence of males, say in their 30s or 40s, because so many have been incarcerated and so many have died of violence or other things like that. This is not an attack. This is not an attack. This is, if anything, an appeal for us to wake up and be aware of some of the pain that our fellow Americans live with. So for sure, your question or your answer is largely going to depend on your own background, your own situation, what you grew up with, what was normal for you. And I'll explain more of my point about what struck me was how recent some of these things were. But I'll give you an example. In 1993, Nancy and I went to India for the first time, and we had a total of five people from our congregation go on the trip, and the congregation was really praying for us. We were away. We took tons of video because it's a whole new world for us. Like, whoa, this is unbelievable. And the needs were staggering. And we came back, and we did a presentation in our congregation, and we played some of the clips. Well, there was an Indian couple in the congregation, and they were outraged. They said, that is not India. That is not our country. That was completely selective. That was terribly misleading. Well, you better believe it was India, and you better believe there was nothing selective or misleading about it. It was footage we took over a three-week trip with Indians the whole time, and what represents an absolute cross-section of part of the population. However, this couple grew up in a prosperous family, living in an area where they never came in contact with that type of poverty and suffering and need. Even the rural nature of things, they just lived somewhere else. So that was real, but it was only part of the picture. So their reality was real, but it was only part of the larger picture. So a lot of how you answer the question about systemic racism or opportunity or things like that in America will tie in with your own life experience, right? It's going to be like that with anything that we answer. What is our life experience? But what struck me was not so much the progress that we've made, but how recent the terrible past was. He's talking about his grandfather as a boy in the South. If a white man walked in the street, he could not look at him and have to get out of the way. That was just his grandfather. Many of you listening, you have grandparents living. This is his grandfather. That's not 900 years ago or 5,000 years ago or even 100 years ago. That's recent. Yeah, thank God for the massive progress that's been made, but that's recent. When he says when his mother was growing up, 10% of African Americans got high school education or graduated from high school, that's devastating. That is a devastating reality. So, yeah, I've been aware of these things. But as someone who grew up, born in New York City, raised on Long Island, white, Jewish, but I encountered very little anti-Semitism growing up. And my dad, family was open-minded as could be. My second organ teacher when I was a boy, not even 10 years old, was a black man. His wife was white. And my father was outraged that they had lost many friends when they got married. They lost friends. Loved ones turned away from them because it was an interracial marriage. And I remember my father thinking, in this day and age, he said, how can that be in this day and age? So I grew up with that and never had talks with black friends in college or high school. They never brought up to me racial profiling or things like that. So it was just not stuff that I was aware of. It was only years later I realized how bad things were for so many around the country. But it's the recentness of how bad they were that struck me. Now, part two when we come back.
I'm Paul Burnett, a board-certified doctor of holistic health, and I want to introduce you to Trivita's multi-collagen formula. If there was ever a message I would want the world to hear, it would be about the importance of supplementing the body with its most abundant protein, known as collagen. Studies have shown multiple health benefits by supplementing with collagen. Trivita's multi-collagen formula does not have just one or two types of collagen, or even three, but five forms of collagen shown to support healthy tendons, ligaments, skin, hair, nails, bones, muscles, gut lining, and even the arteries and veins. Trivita did not stop there. Each of the five forms of collagen in Trivita's multi-collagen formula are hydrolyzed, which increases maximum absorption. Trivita's multi-collagen formula is an easy dissolving powder that can be added to your favorite beverages and even soups in your favorite recipes. Each serving of Trivita's multi-collagen formula provides 9 grams of protein, is gluten-free, GMO-free, hormone-free, and sourced from grass-fed bovine, cage-free chickens, and even wild-caught fish. And you can rest assured that Trivita's multi-collagen formula is manufactured right here in the United States of America.
To place your order for products to support your wellness goals, call 1-800-771-5584, 800-771-5584, or online at Trivita.com as a Trivita introductory offer. Use promo code BROWN25 and receive a 25% discount on the products of your choice. That number again is 1-800-771-5584. 800-771-5584.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on The Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
That is the number to call, 866-34-TRUTH. You get to weigh in. First, let me give part two. So the first thing that struck me when Senator Scott spoke was not the progress that we've made. Thank God for the progress, and we continue to make progress. That's not the first thing that struck me. The first thing that struck me was, wow, these things are very, very recent in our history. some parts of America much more extreme than others in that regard, right? Some parts of America where there's been much more equal opportunity for years, educational opportunity, job opportunity, and others where that's not been the case. Or were there real estate laws that still on the books that make it more difficult for a black person than a white person? And a lot of these things, you know, how would you know about it unless you encountered it or were in that field, right? So it's been educational for me over the many years of interacting with my African-American friends, callers, to be reminded of some of this. Hey, look, we took our tour group in Israel to the Holocaust Museum. Right. So that goes back to the horrors that took place in the 30s and 40s in Nazi Germany and Europe. So that horrific and to this moment, that's a theme. Never again. And memories, annual memorials to the Holocaust and the memory of the those that died and suffered, etc. It's one of the most horrible chapters in human history. You say, well, a slave trade, that was, you know, that was horrible, but that was 100 years earlier, 150 years earlier. Well, hang on. Let's not compare. These are both horrific chapters in human history. Both horrific chapters in human history. And segregation, Civil Rights Act, that's not until 1964. I was 9 years old. That's when the Beatles came to America. But here's the other thing. This is the part two I wanted to get to. This is on a government website. It cited the 2019 survey of consumer finances, right, 2019. It said this: white families have the highest level of both median and mean family wealth, $188,200. So that would be median income, I guess, and then family wealth, $983,400, respectively. All right? So the highest level of both median and mean family wealth, $188,200 and $983,400 respectively. So let's say assets that you have, home, and things like that, business investments, whatever. So white family, this was how it averaged out. Black and Hispanic families have considerably less wealth than white families. Black families' median and mean wealth is less than 15% that of white families, at $24,100 and $142,500, respectively. Hispanic family median and mean wealth is $36,100 and $165,000, respectively. So compared to $188,200 for a white family median family wealth, it's $24,100 for a black family and $36,100 for Hispanic. For white family wealth, mean family wealth, $983,400. Black family, $142,500. Hispanic family, $165,500 on average. All right, so what that is telling us is that the legacy of systemic racism in the past, it takes a while to undo that. All right, now, please hear this. I do not suffer from white guilt. It has never occurred to me a second in my life to feel guilty for being white, any more than I feel guilty for having a nose, okay? It's never occurred to me, and I find zero substance to that whatsoever. And when I look back to my family history and immigrants coming over and their history and how the hardships they had to overcome and having no connection to the history of slave trade or segregation, etc., either on my mother or father's side, all the more am I completely untouched by the idea of white guilt. Right? So that's not what's making me speak here. I have no desire to seem, oh, yeah, right, with the stance that we take day and night, with the conservative, biblically-based stance we take day and night. I'm trying to prove I'm woke. I want everybody to think I'm progressive. No, nonsense. And although I have some colleagues who've made strong arguments based on biblical justice for reparations, I'm not arguing for reparations. All I'm saying is, for For many who didn't grow up with this, whatever your skin color or ethnicity, or who may not be as sensitive to the realities, is that something that was so much a part of our culture for so long does not get undone overnight. It doesn't get undone in 10 or 20 or even 30 years. Now, when you build into it some of the ongoing problems, look, there are critics of the Democratic Party and of the welfare system that said, look, the Democrats, they were the party of the slaveholders. Remember, the Republicans were the abolition party. So the Democrats were the party of the slaveholders and the slave owners and all of that, that you owned their bodies in the past. Now you want to own their votes now and set up systems that create bondage, create dependency, a welfare system that rewards a woman financially for having a child without the husband or father there. Say, you know, something, it's in a crass way to say it. I'm just saying this is what critics would say, and that there's something set up now so that the average African-American family is far less intact today than it was before the Civil Rights Movement. And that's the key to everything. And this is just another aspect of racism in America. Someone would make that argument as well. My point is simply to say this, that if you really have a heart for people, a heart for God, a heart for justice, that while you applaud what Tim Scott said about the progress and say yes, that in more and more cases, it's not the exception, it's the rule, be it CEOs, be it professors, be it people on social media, influencers, be it faces on TV, let alone athletes, etc., that yes, successful African Americans are hardly the exception. It's very normal and unexceptional and something that we see and live with all the time. At the same time, let's recognize that the horrible legacy of so many years, not just slavery, post-slavery segregation, and other things built into our systems beyond what we even realize, and it still may filter through the courts and still may filter through areas of business, etc., that it takes a while to overcome those things, and that we have to listen with open ears, recognize, rather than say, well, I'm on the left, you're on the right, I'm Democrat, I'm Republican. No, as followers of Jesus, to listen to with open ears and say, we want justice, we want righteousness, we want God's purposes, we want God's best. And we work together for that. Shouldn't we all be able to do it across the board politically, across the board ethnically, across the board skin color? Shouldn't we say, hey, we want as much as possible a level playing field for all Americans? We're not trying to guarantee equality of outcome, but we want to try to, as much as possible, help people get a level playing field, have a good shot at making it in this country. Shouldn't that be our goal together? All right. I'm gonna stop here, and I'm going to take a call, but we're going to go completely off topic in the last few minutes of the broadcast. So Josh in Miriam, Virginia, go ahead. You've got a question unrelated to what we've been talking about. Go for it, please.
Well, Dr. Brown, I just want to thank you for your ministry, and it's really helped me over the last little bit here recently.
Thank you.
And, I wanted to talk to you about ministry. I had felt led to go into a type of ministry, but I don't know exactly if that calling would be a full-time pastorship, but a part of me thinks it's to organize fellowship with believers, because I think we have a need for that in church. And I'm just recently married. I'm praying and talking to my wife about this and making sure that she knows that she's the first, her and Jesus are the first priority.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I'd like some advice on that.
Yes, sir.
A part of me.
And tell you what, I'm gonna interrupt, as I have to do sometimes towards the end of the broadcast, because I'm looking at that clock right ahead of me, and I want to give you an answer with some substance in the couple of minutes that I have. Number one, walk in the light that you have, in obedience to the burden that you have, without worrying about how it's going to work out. Just like when you first met your wife, it's unlikely, and that happens sometimes, but it's unlikely the first time you met her that you said, this is the woman I'm going to marry. But you got to know her, and then you spent more time together. And then the more time you spent together, at a certain point, you said, this is the woman that I want to marry. So same thing here. You give yourself to the burden you have. Okay, maybe I can just invite people over to the home more. Maybe we can do something. You're part of a local church, and you just do something that any member could do, and you cultivate that. Or you talk to your pastor and say, hey, I'm burdened to do it. Would you mind if I just try to help more to get more families together, or get believers together, to just grow as disciples more? Would I be able to do that? Or if you just feel to go to an unreached area and just start meeting with people and gathering them, do what's in your heart to do. Walk in the light that you have. It's almost like someone taking up a certain sport or an instrument. You thought, wow, I can do this. I can do this really well. I could do this full time. As those things begin to develop, everything else falls into place on its own naturally. Walk in the direction of the light you have. It'll get brighter and brighter. Put your hand to the plow, and the next step will fall into place naturally. May the Lord bless you and be gracious to you. And friends, let us move forward. Jesus is at work. Together, we are making a difference.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.